Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, October 12th.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. You notice we don't say hi, Rachel, anymore because we don't want to assume that you are.
I love it. It's endearing. I love it. It makes me feel home, like I'm home.
At home.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm also high.
You probably bummed out. I mean, we were talking about this yesterday, but all these marijuana farms are burning,
I saw that.
Emerald Triangle.
Yeah, it's right before legalization is, and this is horrible timing. So,
Yeah. And these people are not insured for the crops.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like we were not only are they losing their homes, which again, you know, you can take out insurance on your house. Those areas are prone to fires and things like this. But the thing about the cannabis industry, like you mentioned, which is completely true, these are people's livelihoods. I mean, these are their like farmers, you know, who grow cattle or raise cattle or whatever. That's their livelihood. So if someone came in and killed all their cattle, they would be out bazillions or whatever the number. You know, you can almost not place a number on it because they're invaluable. You know, you have to. You have to have cattle. It's the same thing with their cannabis. You know, these are seeds and genetics and strains that cannot be saved.
I mean,
and there's no insurance that covers it.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's still illegal on the federal level.
Right.
So the insurance
companies
won't
touch it. So not only are they out of it, they don't have any help to rebuild their livelihoods now.
Right. Yeah, I know. And that's pretty sad. Obviously, these people take a lot of risk anyway just to grow their crop.
Well, this is what this period of time we're in harvest season right now. So this is what they've been waiting for.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we'll see how it affects the prices, man.
But here's the thing. You know, we don't just get our weed from up north. Have our Southern California is, you know, we're set. We got, you know, we get our weed, you know, people grow down here. So,
right. But if it's all shorter in the state, you know, I mean, if it really cuts down on the supply, it might raise the prices. I don't know. Like those dispensaries and stuff, they can't cross state lines with this, right?
No.
If it's legal here, it's legal here, and that's it. But
no, they can't. They can't bring it to other states.
Even if Nevada is legal, right? And here is legal, they won't let you take it across state.
Nope.
Yeah. Very interesting, but, you know, that's it's sad commentary on a lot of things that are happening. I don't know if the drought had anything to do with it. I'm sure it helps. But I don't know how these fires always start. You know, there's got to be somebody starting them or something.
No, I mean, I used to work at a summer camp in Malibu when I was growing up. And during certain times of year, depending on the weather condition, it's just prone to fires starting because you have the brush, you have the sun, and you have the dryness. I mean, it just, you know, like when you, like burning an ant under a microscope, or what are those called?
Magnifying glass.
I mean, that's just how... thing, you know, there's weather conditions that make it perfect to start fires. And of course, yeah, I mean, if someone's driving on the road and they throw out a cigarette, that also can, I think, smoke.
But there's been times when people did it on purpose, you know. I mean, there's been arsons big fires.
Yeah,
I'm not
saying
it happened.
Well, here's the thing. It could go either way. Part of me is like, it is kind of a coincidence that during harvest season, all of these cannabis crops have been ruined in this particular part of town, part of the area of California. However, I'm also aware, as living in California, that we are prone to fires like this. They just happen. We live in a weather condition part of the area that is prone to these types of fires.
Right. Yeah, we still have a lot of dryness here. I mean, beautiful weather here. Don't get us wrong. I mean, everybody wants to be here. But at the same time, we do have our disasters too, I guess, you know. Every place has got its own type of disasters and stuff. But what are you going to do? Okay, well, let's get to our guest. You brought in a guest. I don't want to get into something too controversial because I'm still tired from yesterday. You wore me out completely. But So go ahead and introduce your friend. You brought in a friend today.
Yeah, our guest today is a super funny comic. We were actually introduced by another guest that we had here, Mike Faverman. Mike Faves was here as a guest. He introduced me to Vanessa Johnston. She's a super funny comic who I just adore, and we are super tight, so I asked her to come on today.
Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having
me. She's also, like, extremely easy on the eyes. I don't know if you've noticed.
What does that mean, Rachel?
I'm just saying, she's very beautiful.
She's
so,
very beautiful,
you know,
indeed.
And she's funny, and she's... Even though she's younger than me, she's kind of not another mentor to I want to say, but she's helping me navigate this whole world of crazy comedy.
Yeah, how long have you been doing comedy, Vanessa?
A couple of years.
A couple of years.
Yeah.
So a year more than Rachel has. So she's got some seniority on you.
Yeah, but she's also worked in the entertainment industry and worked for, you know, huge companies out here, and you know, so has experience on that end that I don't have, so...
Yeah. Where are you originally from, Vanessa?
I'm originally from Minnesota.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where, like the big city?
Like 20 minutes south of the metro.
Really?
So basically...
Whoa.
Yeah.
So Midwest kind of girl, right?
I mean, that's what they say. I've lived in LA for 8 years. I feel like once you've... I moved here when I was 18, so I feel like a lot of my development was out here. So I feel
right?
In LA.
You are very LA. Here. You're super LA now.
Yeah.
Do you have any siblings still back home?
Yeah, I have two brothers that live in Minnesota, and then my sister lives out here with me. She's a chef at Spago.
Really?
For Wolfgang Puck.
Nice.
She does pastry.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that? Did you guys move together?
No, I moved out here first, and then she moved out a couple years after me.
Oh, wow. So you moved rather early on. I mean, what made you decide to pack up and leave at 18?
I know. I was actually planning on going to college and doing the whole Wall Street president thing. I was like, I'm going to be the first female president. Watch out, world.
But that's a good ambition to have.
I know.
Right? So what?
Now I get to do all the speeches, but without all the
right?
the politically correctness.
Yeah,
it's a good situation.
So, Minnesota, is that like a rather conservative area where you grew up?
It's interesting, actually. So, it's very segregated. 1 in 4 people in Minnesota work for the government, so it's actually a liberal leaning state. However, when you get outside of the city, it's very conservative because it's you know, it's predominantly white, and they're you know, they've been here for a while, very religious,
right?
All mostly Lutheran.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, did you ever get used to the cold? I always like to ask people that because, you know, people that grew up in the cold places, they say you never get used to it. And I'm like, but you grew up in it. That's all you know, right?
You do. So. You get used to it.
Do you?
Yeah. I used to snowboard all the time after school, and looking back at it, I'm just like, wow, that's insane. If it was above 28 degrees, I couldn't snowboard with a jacket on.
Really?
Because it was too hot.
Oh, my God.
So I would wear just a shirt and snowboard if it was above 28 degrees because I would start sweating.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Well, it's like working. It's
a body
workout.
Gets used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sort of adapt to it, huh?
People start wearing shorts in Minnesota once it hits 50 degrees,
yeah.
And that's not a joke.
That's bad.
I know. We wear fur when it hits 50.
And I have a dingo husky. We went back to Minnesota a couple years ago in January, and she'd never been there in the winter. And when we got off the plane and walked outside, I mean, it's probably about negative 15 without wind chill. And my dog with a fur coat looked at me and was like, are you serious right now?
You want me to go out there?
No, we were standing outside and she looked at me like, I know I'm not supposed to leave, but I don't think we're supposed to leave. I was like, you're an LA dog. Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to your habitat. Time to man up, dude.
Welcome to your habitat. For real.
Wow. That's funny, though, right? Because the dog goes from one climate to another. They don't know what the hell's going on.
She's never... Well, it's weird because she's half dingo, which is Australian warm climate, and then half husky. So she's kind of polar opposite natural habitats.
It's got to be a pretty dog, though,
she's
huh?
She's gorgeous.
A mix like that.
She's beautiful. Mm. I was going to model her when she was a baby, but I was like, I don't want to be a stage mom to my dog. I don't want her to live the life of a...
She, like, grows up to be a cocaine addict, like, you know.
I was just like, it's not going to be fair. You have to be on set. I don't want to, like, use you for your, like, looks. And I got really sad just the thought of it. So now she's, like, good. She's awesome.
I rest How long her. Have you had her now?
So I got her 3 weeks after living in LA. So basically, we've been a team since I've been here.
Wow.
Yeah, I rescued her from a shelter, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna rescue you and put you in a worse situation being on set.
Are you a considerate dog owner? I mean, do you consider people who don't like dogs or places that dogs don't really go in? Because, you know, the reason I'm asking this is because some people really feel that everybody needs to be in on the idea of their dog. So, like, they'll bring dogs here and stuff like that, or like they, you know, they take dogs places. It's like, oh, it's a service dog, and you know they're lying, or it's because it's an emotional thing. So, you know, sometimes people go, well, do you like dogs? They say, I love dogs, but I don't like dog people, you know, because some of them are like, so I'm...
I've
so
never
that's
heard
I'm
someone say,
you.
I don't like dog people.
Yeah, no, I mean dog owners. I mean dog owners, that's why.
I think
I
you should have stuck with dog people.
Why? No, but it's the owners of the dog.
Why do you own cats? So,
no, I don't own any animals at all. I just don't like when someone pushes their... animal on people that don't want to be around.
It's kind of like a religious person, like a Jehovah Witness.
Yeah, kind of like everybody
just
needs to be in on it, you know.
So this plant is like your only pet that you have.
I don't have a pet at all. Yeah, that's not. But this one is lived for 10 years. Do you believe it? It's what they call a money tree, and I'm still waiting for the money to come in. But the plant is still
it's a little alive. Sparse.
The only money that is the money going towards the tree.
Yeah, right. To keep that alive, which is a lot more than he spent on the tree itself. So,
so very interesting. Vanessa Johnston coming from Minnesota. I used to know someone from Minnesota when I was a kid, and then I traveled there once. I couldn't believe I wasn't even prepared for it. I came with like leather sole shoes and stuff, or rubber shoes, and then you just fall, you know, and you slide and you trip. And I remember the car getting stuck in the ice, and then we had to get it out. And wow.
Seems right? Like you loved your vacation.
You went there in the winter?
In the winter.
I don't think your friend was a good friend.
Yeah. No.
Like, hey, why don't you come not in the middle of of frozen.
Of the blizzard.
Right.
Of
the frozen season. Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a friend, actually. It was a romantic situation where I had to go there and stuff. But
for holidays?
She moved. No, she moved, and then I had to move, and we tried to make it. I mean, I didn't move. I just went to visit her, and we tried to make things work. I lived in Vegas at the time. That was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I was very young, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I just remember going there, and it was so different.
Yeah.
And people just laughed at me because they're like, you're not dressed for this weather. I said, I know. I don't have clothes for that.
Love will
I live
take
in
you
Vegas.
To strange places.
Yeah, right. At that point, it wasn't love anymore. I don't even know why the hell I went there.
Yeah.
She was toxic, man. She was toxic. But at any rate, so you decided to skip the college route?
Yeah, and then not on... I graduated high school early, and so it wasn't on purpose, but basically...
What do you mean not on purpose? What happened?
Well, so I graduated high school a year early. I was very good at school.
Yeah, okay.
I was pretty precocious, and so...
All right, so that's by design, I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wow, so you're a good student, too.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Were you in sports at all in school?
I was on the debate team and the speech team.
Okay, that's not
sports. I was like
sports.
A nerd.
That's
and I was on the chess
sports.
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you sick at chess?
I was pretty good. I used to compete. I'm on the LA chess team. LA
really?
Chess. Yeah, I'm a member of the LA Chess Club and the U.S. Chess Federation.
Not
cool.
To brag.
You know, I still
know. But I mean, if she's good at it.
No,
she
I mean,
loves
I think that's good. She
it
should
is,
shout
right?
That from the rooftops. I
exactly.
Mean, like, honestly, if you had a Tinder profile, not that you would ever need one, that's what, just put that.
I know. I need to get better because they do tournaments. There's actually a tournament this month I was invited to, and the prize was like $50,000. I was like, can I just be a professional chess player? So in school, I didn't really do sports, just school.
Did you plan on really capitalizing on the chess? I mean, I know you're doing it now, but no, nothing professional or anything.
No,
right?
I got, I started in, I joined the chess club in fourth grade. I don't even know how that happened. And then I think they did like a little school tournament over, it was like just a thing. And then I won it. And so then I somehow became a part of this club. Yeah.
Like, come with us, Vanessa.
Come to the dark side.
Yeah. I prefer
don't
white.
Look back.
And I like black.
So, chess is cool. I do want to get back into it more. Yeah. I used to play, whatever. I'm not going to nerd out with you.
That's
but,
okay. Why not?
I mean, you
should be proud of it, you know. I think a lot of people would love to play chess well. I know I would.
I don't know a dumb person that plays chess. I don't know any stupid.
Right.
All smart people.
Like, yeah, right.
The dumb ones like me are like, we stop at checkers. You know what I mean? We're like, all right, that's enough rules. Forward, backward. You're like, I know.
And chess is funny because if you get good at it, it doesn't matter how old you are and how much experience you have. I mean, my son would beat me. Like, I haven't played chess in years. He had to show me how or to remind me how. But he was kicking my ass when he was like 16 years old, you know. So,
well, 16, I mean, there's people, like I said, they have elementary school kids that play chess at like a relatively high level. The thing about chess is that when you play it, it shows you what your weaknesses are in real life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's so interesting because that's such a good point, I feel like, because each player thing has its own rules, right?
Right.
And so each time someone makes a move, like if you're going to react quickly and not really strategize, you know, that's probably the kind of person
true.
You are in real life.
That's how I act without strategizing, you're saying?
No, I'm just saying if that's something that people do, like if, you know, if someone makes a move, not you per se, mm-hmm. but like maybe new beginners or whatever, that's just something we do in life. We react quickly without thinking what the bigger picture is of the
100%.
Without thinking a few moves ahead.
Right,
exactly. And you can see how people react to, just like in life, if things don't go the way that you expected, because you expect your opponent to make certain moves, and when they do something else, you can see how someone reacts, and
that's true,
reflective of how they would in real life. Your attention span, mm-hmm. your ability to, just in general, tenacity. Like, one thing that I have an issue with is, I can see three moves ahead, but once things start not going my way,
uh-huh.
I start, I already determine the outcome, and then I just go really fast.
Right.
Really?
So I'm like, oh, I'm going to lose this game. I don't want to think to fix it, so I'm just going to play it out
really
quickly because I just want to be over with, and I do that in life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe if you, you just, because you're not assuming that they won't fuck up, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, that's so interesting because that may not necessarily, it could play out in your mm-hmm. favor.
Right.
You know?
So this is like focusing on problem solving and stuff, how you deal with
adversity,
it, right?
Adversity and everything. That's so cool.
Well, that's why I think chess is really good for children, because it teaches them these skills that it just really teaches them to think and be patient and strategize and not react emotionally.
Right, because chess games can go on for a long time.
Right, and they can be very frustrating, too, if you're starting to lose, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I know. I would probably get irritated, like, in real life.
And it's also understanding your opponent and watching, okay, they make those moves. What moves are they most likely to make?
Oh,
you know?
Okay. So you really have to concentrate on this to really figure it out.
Well, sometimes one of my really good friends is a huge movie producer and won all these Academy Awards, and he has his kid. It's like, he's like a little genius, and he was like, hey, can you sometime come over and just play chess with him, because he loves chess? And I was like, sure. And the kid beat me, and it was purely because he made moves that an adult wouldn't make. The kid was just, yeah, the kid just made moves that I didn't even expect someone to make, and it's because he's a kid, and just like, that's how kids are in life, right? Like, they see things differently and unpredictable, and they just make these things. And
they see things differently,
right?
For sure.
And so it's, you know, it's hard. Like, the easiest thing to beat is a computer. It's easier for me. I can beat the computer on hard, like master level.
Wow.
And then sometimes I'll lose to a kid just because it's not predictable. You know the computer, what moves the computer most likely will make.
Right, because
it's all based on probability.
Exactly, exactly. It's not thinking about the person itself.
Or yeah, like the emotions going into it and things like that.
Right.
Very true, very true.
Or the sacrifice the other person would make in order to move, you know what I mean?
Right, because the computer will almost never sacrifice a piece.
Right.
It always does the highest probability.
Or assume you would either.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow. Very interesting. Yeah. Did you ever watch the game between Kasparov and Deep Blue, was it?
Mm-mm.
No? Because, this is like a famous thing where he lost to the computer. Mm-hmm. And he was really irritated and stuff, you know? So he started contesting it and all that stuff. But, he lost to it was called Big Blue, IBM's Big Blue computer. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like in the 80s or something, you know.
Is this a movie or
no movie? This really happened.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about, and he was basically upset and he said that they somehow cheated or something, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what can you say, you know? For those of you just joining us, excuse me, we're joined by Vanessa Johnston, a good friend of Rachel's and also a comedian. And so you decided to hell with college and everything. I'm going to L.A. to Hollywood.
Yeah, for a scholarship I won to a film school. It was just supposed to be a short-term thing, and then I was going to go, because I had a year. I graduated a year early, so I had this time before going to school. I was going to go to a school in Pennsylvania, and graduated early, did the scholarship, and then while I was here I got cast in a couple of things. And basically the school, I'd never done acting before. I had no interest in acting. I was a left brain academic. I started getting college chemistry when I was 15. Like, there was not there was barely an emotional bone in my body. And that acting class made me realize that and how important it was to connect emotionally with people and utilize my right brain. And so it became more less of like a career thing and more of just a human growth,
interpersonal skills,
right? 100%
out and out, especially here.
It was basically like therapy for me. And so I ended up staying and get casted in a couple things, and I became SAG and did a couple shows, did a couple movies. And then like 3 years into that, I kind of was like, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be president right now? No. And so I quit acting in like basically while I was on set in a trailer as a lead in a movie. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I finished the movie.
Really?
Yeah, I finished the movie. Uh-huh. And then I was just like, I need more. And so I started working at HBO, and I worked at HBO for 3 years, and that's when I started doing comedy at night. And now I don't do that. And now I just do comedy full time.
Yeah.
So now I'm here.
Yeah. They're very cool. So it was a conscious decision for you to leave the acting and say, I'm doing comedy, right? This is what you want your career to be about.
Mm-hmm.
You see, people do that, Rachel. I mean, they do it all the time, right? So I'm with you on that. You know, I think you guys, if you focus on what you want.
I think there's like I wouldn't want to put people into boxes, but I think there are people who have always wanted to do comedy their whole life. But I think that's all of us. We just, you know, some of us have parents that are like, you're going to go to college, you know, fuck the arts or whatever.
Yeah, get a real job.
And if it's always there, it's going to come out at some point in your life, hopefully sooner than later, you know, because it's much harder as you get older. But I think there are people who've like always wanted to do comedy, and I envy them to an extent, but like, I couldn't have done comedy at 18. I would be Lindsay Lohan. Like, you know what I mean?
Me
like,
too.
I couldn't emotionally. I was not in a place mentally or emotionally or mature to. I would be in. I would have said horrible things. You know, I would be in trouble right now for those words probably. But I just think it's cool, and I also. I don't even care if you're funny or not. If you're out there putting yourself out there doing comedy, it takes a lot of balls. It's one of the hardest things to do in the world is to get people to laugh.
Right.
Especially if you're good at it. There's so much respect, you know, there. And so I just, like, that's why I respect Vanessa, because, you know, we both kind of did other things or whatever and had other things presented to us. But we're like, fuck that. You know, we want to do what we love, you know, comedy.
Are you allowed to swear on this show?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Oh, I thought
there's
we were
no
on the radio.
FCC.
But I, but then again, you know, but that, you but I always, oh. But when I meet comics who are like, I've done comedy since I was 12 years old, I'm like, oh my God, like how, what happened to you? You know what I mean? That
nah,
you're getting
yeah.
into comedy at 12. I mean, respect, but like.
That's a coke habit.
I know. Like, that's basically, so basically you've been in rehab for 15 years. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, but. But yeah, I think, you know, it, that's, you got to start somewhere. You got to just do it, you know?
Yeah. So I see, I'm looking at your Instagram account. It looks like you're pretty active physically, right? Like sports and and things like that. No yoga and stuff? Is that just bullshit or what?
It looks like you're very active. I was like, I know I do a lot of shows physically. Like,
yeah.
I was like, no, I've never once seen Vanessa go to the gym.
Well, she's kickboxing here, so I don't know. What's that
about?
Oh,
you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I used to work out like 2 hours a day.
And then yoga, I see yoga positions and stuff. So.
Oh, that's not me. That's just a photo.
That's somebody else. Okay. Yeah, I figured, what's she doing on the... yeah,
it's
okay.
Couples yoga. There's like a dude, except yeah, yeah. a chick, and I was like, relationship goals.
It's not you.
No,
no. Okay.
I don't think I could date a guy that would actually do that with me.
100%. Yeah, right.
So you don't like the gym? You don't go to the gym?
No, I do. I do. I used to go to the gym every day. Now I go on the road so much, and so.
It's hard to keep up, huh?
Well, it's just the gyms are always different. So when I'm, I honestly haven't worked out in 2 months. But before that, I work out every day. I'm gonna rejoin a gym. It's just figuring out because when I go on the road, there's all these different gyms.
Right.
And so it's annoying because the gyms that are good on the road, like 24-hour fitness on the road is great.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think so. Well, it's not great, but it's good.
I think 24-hour fitness is a good gym.
Really?
For what you pay.
Well, I mean, I think it's...
decent.
It's, yeah, the one there... Yeah, maybe. I need to join a new gym, basically. I was at the LA... I was at the Equinox, which is so overpriced.
I used to work at Equinox.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I worked there. For,
some of the
you know,
worst...
You do in-between shit when you're in-between shit, you know? So that was one of my in-betweeners. Like, what are you going to do?
So Equinox is kind of like, ugh. And then...
It's just over... I think it's... Listen, you can bring your own eucalyptus... and spray it in the shower and pay $40 a month, or you can go to Equinox and they do it through the shower themselves and pay $200. So you tell me. Yeah. You tell me.
That's true.
Tell me about your first, like, what was the moment that made you want to get into comedy? Like, what was that experience? Like, I don't know if you were like, it was September 12th, 2004. Oh. You know, but like, for me, it was like I was, you know, I was at a point, like, I had wanted to do stand-up. I had done improv and acting as a kid, like, for many years. But stand-up in particular, I had actually wanted to get into it 3 years ago, and I was talking about getting into it, and it was almost one of those things, you know, when you have, like, just something that's bothering you, you're meaning to do, and it just, like, it just grows bigger the longer right. you put it out. Right. So that was me for 3 years ago. And then it was right before I turned 30. I was like, I have to do this now or I'm never going to fucking do it. So I just started going to mics. I connected with Lisa. She was my mentor.
Right.
Started getting in writing groups. And then, like, I got into it. I had to do it. So, like, what was that? What was your process like? Or what would? Yeah. Who was the person that was like, Vanessa, you need to be on stage? You know, what
no
was
one.
That? She was like, it was myself. All of my all of my personalities. They're like, all you got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. The little voices in my head said. They just always were laughing. And I was like, I think I'm onto something.
You guys are my favorite audience. Exactly.
First of all, I didn't even know stand-up comedy existed until I was like 20 years old. My family doesn't really engage in pop culture.
right, because they're lawyers and...
Yeah, we didn't have cable. They don't, I mean, you know, they're kind of, I watched like 3 movies growing up. It was Gladiator, Braveheart, and one other one.
Oh my God, that's like my, those when are like I was my like, dad's favorite movies.
Yeah,
dad movies.
Dad
you know?
Movies.
Yeah, right?
When I was like 10, they're like, it's time you learned about life. I'm like, Scotland.
They're like, you're going to watch Lost.
It's funny that I just saw Braveheart for the first time a month ago.
Oh, it's a great
really?
Mel Gibson movie.
A very good movie. I'd never seen it before.
Too bad Mel Gibson happened to Mel Gibson, but like...
That's true, but he does have good movies. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's true. I loved What Women Want.
Yeah, you like that one? Actually, I never saw that one.
She's just like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Like, it was such a weird movie for him.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did.
So you basically weren't aware that stand-up was like a thing.
No.
Like you knew about comics, but you didn't realize it was like an industry that you could get to work.
I didn't even know about comics. Wow. I didn't know.
Really?
I just didn't even know. And then someone took me on a date to Oddball Comedy Festival, like 2 hours away. It's far. And I was like, this guy's for sure going to kill me. I was like, either this is going to end. So I go there. I saw Chris D'Elia on stage in this big amphitheater, and I was like, people do this? They just go up there and talk and people laugh, and I could do this.
Yeah.
I was a nationally ranked debater and public speaker. I spent my weekends in like DC debating felon disenfranchisement. I can talk about cell phones. Right. I got this.
Wow.
You know?
Exactly.
Dating's hard. I'm like, yeah, we got it. Like we cool. So I was like, I wanna be a comic, or I wanna do this. And so being an academic person, my first thought was like, I'm going to buy all the books on stand-up comedy.
Right.
So I go to Barnes & Noble.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Always get books on the new things.
I was like, whatever, for dummies.
I was like, I'll get the stand-up comedy textbook, and I'm going to learn how to do comedy, which is, by the way, the least textbook thing you can do.
Right.
You know, so.
But at least it teaches you some techniques or what to expect in the industry.
Well, I think it's like anything.
Like
you got to learn about the theory. You have to learn about anything. You know, you got to get with the basics of anything before you get into it. So
no,
I think,
absolutely.
You know,
all
so
the fundamentals
makes
and
sense,
stuff.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, look, you went to Lisa, and Lisa helped you in a way as well, you know.
Well, for
if
me,
she'd written the book,
exactly.
It would be the same thing.
Well, I do read books about it. I just, for me...
No, I say if she had written one, then it would be the same thing. You
right.
Know? It'd be like, you know.
The book exactly. I bought was awful.
Yeah.
The book I got was so bad. Apparently. It was called The Comedy Bible. Shout out Judy. No, I was kidding. it's like reverse promo of books. You're like, don't buy this book. It was not... I read it and I was just like, I don't think I'm made to do stand-up comedy. This makes no sense. The book, just everything it said didn't make sense to me, and I was just like, I guess I'm not meant to be a comic. And then like a year goes by, I'm working at HBO. A bunch of people that work in my office were like, hey, we're gonna go to the improv and see this show. I was watching the show and I was like, they don't really do what the book said to do. I'm watching these comics. I'm like, so maybe this book's wrong.
Yeah, right.
I didn't even think about that for a year.
Plus, you had also never heard of the person who wrote that book. You know what I mean? You don't see him out there doing comedy.
No.
You're like, who the fuck is Judy?
Yeah.
Dude, it was like the highest rated book on like Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, but that's
because
all of her mediocre friends were
probably.
Just like rating
yeah.
it.
This is like all these dating experts right? at 45, unmarried still, you know, no relationship.
Or like
and
overweight,
they try to teach
overweight
you.
Workout trainers.
Yeah, right.
100%.
Do this juice cleanse, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's this radio personality who's quite overweight, and he always makes fun of overweight women. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, what the hell, what right do you have to do this? Look at you, mm-hmm. fucking slob.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Is he married?
No. He's totally anti.
That's my favorite part is men who are so awful to women, and they just, or just like men who are just awful in general.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Not all men. Don't worry,
that's
Sam.
True.
Not all men. But
well,
the ones that are,
yeah,
they're always single.
Yeah, right? That's true. I was just thinking about that. I have a friend.
You go home to your left hand.
Yeah. That's true, right?
Why the fuck are you talking about other people? Like, you know what I mean? That's fine.
But no, you know what? It makes sense. When men are, when they treat women anything less than what they deserve,
you can usually
they're
tell,
not married.
You can usually tell someone is unhappy with their lives based off how they talk about the world around them.
I mean, I
know
a guy that was a friend of mine at 20. So he's about my age now, still haven't been married, no kids, no nothing. And I'm thinking, but he's a playboy. That's what he tries to put across.
Is he a playboy, or is he
in his mind,
he a playboy?
Exactly. So he takes pictures with beautiful women, but you don't know what happens.
With or without their consent.
Well, you know, but it's probably
he's like,
a party.
The girl's like bending over. He's like, check out my babe, click.
Right. And it's
like a cocktail waitress.
It's pictures at events that he goes to. I'm sure it's just women that he meets, and they just take a picture together.
Oh, my
but
God.
He
there's
tries
so
to
many of those.
That. He tries
is
to
the kind of guy
playboy.
That thinks strippers are in love with him too?
That I don't know. Seems I mean, right. I don't talk to him, you know? Yeah. It just, I Few years he comes around.
He's like, I just like all of his photos on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah. On my Facebook.
I just repost everything.
Right, exactly.
So, okay, so you were at the HBO, took you to the, or you went to the improv when you were working at HBO.
Right.
And then
I was like, oh, they're not doing what the book says. Maybe I can, maybe I'll try this again. And so for like a month, I wrote 3 minutes. I bought a mic stand and a speaker amplifier. And I sat in my house in front of my sister and my dogs, and I was like, is this funny? And I practiced my 3 minutes for a month.
That's a good idea. Yeah, yeah.
Recorded it, got it all timed out. I was like, now's my moment. And the first open mic I did was at the Westside Comedy Theater in Santa Monica, which is the only comedy club over there, basically. And went on stage. I was so nervous that the way I looked was going to affect something. And so I wore a hoodie, like, on my head, like, all black, baggy sweatpants. Like, I looked like I was about to rob this comedy place.
She basically looks like Eminem in 8 Mile.
Yeah, exactly.
Right before she took the stage.
100%. That's exactly what I looked like.
I picture you in the bathroom, like, giving yourself your own speech, you know?
And just, I was
like,
wearing a hat.
So wait a minute. You were concerned that your good looks are going to get in the way?
Something. Welcome to comedy.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Well, can I just tell you, to your point, I brought you up this weekend when I was in Vegas, and any constructive feedback that I ever get in comedy, I'm so grateful for, because I'm new to this. Like, I'm a new comic. I want to do things right.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Everyone tells you everything different, so I don't say take everyone's advice. Take people who you trust. You know, if they're not funny, I wouldn't take their advice.
Yeah.
But I wore a shirt on stage that showed my stomach. In LA, it's all right, but I didn't realize when you go to other places, you know, what happens in LA is not true to the rooms in other places in the country. Even in San Diego, even up north, you drive an hour out to Ontario or whatever.
Different
it's
world,
different.
Huh?
So the comic there, who is a really great guy, and I do trust him, he was like, look, don't wear crop tops on stage when you're out here, because you're a really funny girl, but you want the guys to want to, what did he say? You want the girls to want to fuck you and the guys to want to buy you a drink or something. I don't know if he meant to reverse it, but it sounded right. Mm-hmm. And immediately I thought of Vanessa, because Vanessa always wears like a t-shirt and jeans on, like a bag. It's not form fitting. Right. And because, you know, Lisa's show, she likes us to dress up, and I'm not comfortable because I don't dress up in my normal life. You'll never catch me in a fucking dress unless I'm being paid to be in a dress.
Right.
You know, I'll wear a skirt if I have to, or a romper at the most.
Right.
So, but I get that's her brand, that's what she's trying to do. But for me and for Vanessa, I think she's 100% right, because that just takes away from what we're trying to put out there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well, I think you want,
it can be distracting.
You want,
you know,
your comedy to speak for itself.
Right.
You don't want
to
go out there and be, you know, girls to be distracted by like, oh, I wish I had her, you know.
Right.
And then the guys are like, oh, I want to, you know, you want them to, I mean, you want that, but you want them to listen what you're saying,
no,
too,
absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, I just want my most important thing to me is making women happy. And so as a comic,
or like, comfortable even.
No, it's just, I mean, when I do shows, more women, like I did the Ontario Improv last week, and there was a line of like 15 women waiting to say, you know, they're like, oh, I really liked your comedy. And
that's cool.
Today's Thursday, right? So Ice House I did Tuesday, and same thing. Like, there are more women came up to me than guys. And like, it's just really important to me that, you know, because male audiences are fine, you know, like they have plenty of comics that appeal to them, like Joe Rogan, Bill Burr. But I think women don't have a lot of comics that they relate to. And so I think that's why, as like a woman, it's important to make them happy. And that's why you don't want your outfit to make them feel uncomfortable. And, you know, so I think for me, it's like when I go on stage, I want most women in the audience to be like, oh, I want her to be my friend, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. So you like when people like you. You want to be liked.
Well, I think that's kind of like as a comic, right?
Yeah.
I think the more that you're liked on stage, the more comfortable and willing people are to laugh at you.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
I think plus in entertainment, I think we're all, in a way, want to be accepted and liked. You
but
know,
you also want to be relatable. And if you're walking out there in a crop top and like, short, or, you know, that's not relatable to them, to the most of the country. I mean, at yeah. least on the women's side, that, that's
yeah,
just
the women's
not,
side, no. They're gonna
especially
say,
when you travel outside of LA, a lot of people don't look like how they look in LA.
Yeah. You know,
they just don't.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's cool. Now, have you done any modeling at all since you came here? I mean, when you moved out here, what was the first thing you wanted to do? Was it comedy?
Can I just say, right? Vanessa took me on my first real modeling. I mean, it wasn't like a, it was real, and for to me it was real because I wasn't modeling with cannabis,
right?
Because any modeling pictures I did do a little bit of bridal modeling in Florida when I was living out there.
Divorce modeling,
it was just
what's
like
the divorce rate in Florida?
Yeah, right. I did some divorce modeling, but she took me on a shoot and it was just so funny and fun. One, because she's fucking great at it. I mean, she can't take a bad picture of this girl. She could try. But the tips, it was funny. Her and her friend, who's a photographer, very nice guy, they were just giving me tips, and it was so fun. But it's hard to get a good pic. You know, you don't realize, like, my eyes are going a certain way. You have to do things with your face.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Wow.
It's hard.
Yeah.
I was on America's Next Top Model. I got casted 2 weeks after moving here. I was scouted.
Wow.
I didn't even want to do it.
You were scouted? Like somebody
yeah,
just saw
on
you?
On social media.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They found me on Facebook and was like, hey, we want you to do America's Next Top Model. You don't even need to go to the casting. Just go to the very last one. Doug, you're basically in. And then I didn't want to do it. And then...
Why?
I was just like, I didn't really want to be associated with like reality TV and...
Yeah.
It just seemed kind of weird. And then my father was like, do it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. He was supportive of it.
He was like, you better do it or else.
Really?
Like,
so you did it?
Yeah. And
what was it like? You didn't like it?
Not really. Well, because basically they... and now I know because I've worked in TV development and I worked in reality. I did TV development at HBO for a couple years and I worked at another production company, which is predominantly... reality. We owned American Idol and So You Think You Can Dance, and so I understand it now, but at the time, basically when I got casted, in my head I was like, I'm gonna be nice to everybody, I'm gonna be cool, I'm gonna be America's Next Top Sweetheart. And I was like, that was my angle. And then when we were filming day two, I get pulled aside by the producers and they're like, hey, we casted you for personality. And I was like, what does that mean? The whole personality, like if you don't turn up the personality, we're gonna kick you off.
Really?
And I was okay. and I didn't really know what that meant. And then day three, they send in producers, ask me questions during my interview, and I was like, they're trying to make me evil.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What were the questions?
Like, they would ask me questions and then say, you need to repeat the question in the answer so that I would say the question. So it was like, were you a rich bitch in high school? And I was like, was I a rich bitch in high school? I mean, I lived in white America. Everyone's a rich bitch. Like,
right.
You know? So, the editing.
Edit is,
yeah.
I was a rich bitch and I was a rich bitch in high school.
Right.
They edited
right.
to be like that, you know?
But maybe they weren't interested in the answers, more like how you would... just to get you talking, no?
No.
It's all about...
They
had a character that they... is because...
There's always an... Have you watched America's Next Top
no,
Model?
No, never have.
Oh, my God. There's always, like, one girl in every... Like, there's personalities. Like, in any reality show, right. There's the girl that's the bitch. There's the girl that everyone hates. There's the mean, pretty girl. You know what I mean? So, it's like, it creates kind of a storyline within the storyline. So, yeah, they're out there doing their modeling, but back in the house, they're fucking catfighting. Right. That girl's cheating on her boyfriend. She's a promiscuous... bisexual, you know, model, whatever it is,
right.
They're trying to, you know, build storylines, and they can't do that unless they're creating drama.
Right.
And how do they create drama is by doing shit like that and
right.
editing and, you know.
Yeah, so I was really uncooperative, so they were like, we're kicking you off after the first episode.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Like, I was like, that's fine, I'm still going to be America's Sweetheart. And then the episode comes out, and they still edited me to be like the bad one. They still, even the fact that I fought every day
wow.
against yeah. it, because they were sneaky.
Yeah.
But
oh my God, you're America's Next Top Model reject.
I was like wow. all these blogs, like, Vanessa's so mean. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's
well,
cool.
So you didn't really feel comfortable.
No, but I was with Wilhelmina before. I got scouted by Wilhelmina the first week of moving here, and then met with Wilhelmina. Wilhelmina wanted to sign me, but when I did America's Next Top Model, I wasn't allowed to be with an agency, so I put off signing with Wilhelmina. Did America's Next Top Model, got off, signed with Wilhelmina, and I modeled for 6 months, and then I quit.
Really?
And I just was acting.
Not for you, huh?
No, yeah, it wasn't really my vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah,
I think
that's
so cool.
I mean, you have a lot to offer.
Victoria's Secret was like, come with us. She was like, I'm good. I was like, I'm just going to make people laugh.
Find somebody else, right. Wow. Very interesting. Vanessa Johnston, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanessa Johnstew with two O's, on Instagram at Vanessa V Johnston, and then I have a new weekly show. If you're part of the LGBTQ community, we have a new weekly comedy show at Rage in West Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's going to be really fun. We're going to have a lot of LGBTQ comics every week, every Tuesday at 9 p.m.
What if you're LGBTQ friendly?
Then come.
What if I made out with a girl in college?
And then you're welcome. Please come. It'll be fun. And there's karaoke afterwards. It's going to be a fun thing.
Yeah. Well, that begs the question. Are you a lesbian?
Oh, I'm bisexual.
Bisexual. That's awesome. So you're the B part of the LGBT.
Yeah. The least favorite letter of that alphabet.
Is it?
Basically.
Because they're like, you have to pick a side?
Yeah, I think people don't think it's like a thing.
Mm. Do you have a preference?
Yeah.
Mm, okay, cool.
I think.
All right. We won't dig too deep into it. At any rate, so we need to promote your upcoming show right now, right? At 11 o'clock, if you guys want to hear about weed and more weed, and also very fun personalities, Olivia and Rachel, you stay right here for the bud.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Right. And anything specific you're going to talk about today, or you just...
We have Jessica Asaf coming up, or I think that's how I pronounce her. Like Jessica, I met her. She's cannabis feminist on Instagram, along with two other really cool girls, Laura and Jackie. And she's the one who was responsible for putting together that Snoop Dogg produced web series, Queens of the Stone Age, that I was a part of. That's coming out now, and we want to bring her on and talk about her journey into cannabis. And she's super smart. I think she went to Harvard or Harvard Business School. And she's going to be an interesting guest, and we're going to get her story, get a little stonesies after. And
sounds
always
good.
Always keeping it real.
That's how you have fun, folks. That's how you live.
Right.
Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're very interesting, a lot of fun. We wish you continued success in everything. Are you weed friendly? Are you cannabis friendly at all?
Oh, I don't really smoke.
You
no.
don't.
She doesn't really smoke. She doesn't really drink.
Yeah, that's good. Well, she's gotta, she's gotta take care of herself.
She's kind of high on life.
On life. There you go.
Something.
Well, not everybody.
I'm high on Rachel.
Yeah.
Not everybody requires additional
smoke
things.
Me, I'm
to
dope.
Feel
Rachel
good.
Smokes for the both of us. I know. I really do. Sometimes I feel like she just gets in my car and I haven't even been smoking for days in the car and she's just high. It's just soaking it up.
Very cool. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Rachel, thank you as always.
Always.
Stay tuned for the bud, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel exclusively on LA Talk Radio.